Okay, good afternoon, everyone. This is Macrobiotic Miracle Spree conference call. I'm your host, Fia Kushi, and I'd like to welcome you all for a special edition coming to you live from Alaska. So I am your host, Fia Kushi, and I have created and founded the Macrobiotic Miracle Spree conference calls as a way to celebrate humanity in general and specifically the journey and stories and lives of wonderful individuals and their journey of courage and healing and hope and inspiration. Macrobiotic Miracles is not intended to be health advice. If you have any serious health condition, please see a medical profession or other health professional that is qualified to help you with your situation. My name is Fia Kushi, and I am the founder of Macrobiotic Miracles Free Conference Calls, and I am also the third son of Michio and Abilene Kushi, macrobiotic and natural food pioneers. My purpose in doing these calls is to help inspire people and to help them create, as well as to create a global, local and global community toward the vision that my parents had established for one peaceful world. So welcome. Tomorrow, these calls happen every Sunday and Monday, Sunday afternoon, 3 to 4 p.m., and Monday, 9 to 10 p.m. And the format of these calls is after a brief introduction. Then I will introduce the guests, our special guests, and they will share their story, followed by a question and answer period. When you have a question, please feel free to press 5-star on your phone, and that will alert me that you have a question. First, also, I'm going to mute everybody right now.
Conference muted.
That way, if there's any extraneous noise behind you, we won't hear it. And then when you do press 5-star, I will unmute you so that you can be heard. Back here in Alaska, in Ionia, this macrobiote community, we do have a lot of children running around, so we do have extraneous noise here, so, as well as interruptions and phone rings, so that you'll hear as part of this call. But pay no attention to that. That's just part of the community lifestyle that is up here in Alaska. So next Monday, our previously scheduled guest, Maggie Cottrell, Dr. Martha Cottrell, who wrote the book with AIDS, Macrobiotics, with my father, Michio Kushi, she had to reschedule. And she rescheduled at the last minute. I am trying to get another person to replace her, if I can't do that, then we will not have a call Monday. That will be tomorrow. Stay tuned to the website. That's www.fiakushi.com to find out who will be on, or if it's being postponed, or if there's no call. You can stay tuned on Facebook, to my Facebook account. You can friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/Fia, P-H-I-Y-A. And I post announcements on Facebook as well. So let me introduce our guest today, a very special guest. I'm going to read to you a bit of their how they describe themselves, and what they say is the following: common problems and hopes for a common solution brought four families together more than 20 years ago. They purchased 5 acres of spruce forest on the Kenai Peninsula in South Central Alaska, and Ionia had its beginnings. The founders came from different geographic, cultural, and socioeconomic backgrounds, as well as different kinds of internal hardships and behavioral dysfunctions. And through a process of trial and error, the families realized that in order realize that individuals, families, and communities are truly interdependent, that in order to sustainably change one thing, they have to change they had to change almost everything. In order to change one thing, they had to change almost everything. And that is, it is impossible to create change without embodying it. This kind of thinking has led to Ionia's endurance. Ionia, by the way, comes from, it was take borrowed from Carl Sagan's book, Cosmos, in which he describes the Ionia culture in the Greek islands. The Ionians have since purchased 160 additional acres of wild Alaskan land. The residents themselves have built 10 beautiful log cabins, a large log community center, and a barn. They mill spruce logs to build their homes and furniture and cut their firewood. Organic gardens, greenhouses, and a grain field help to feed them throughout the year. Their population hovers around 50, from newborns to elders, and without compromising access to the latest technologies, they live here with a minimum of disturbances to the land's natural beauty and balance. Join us. Here we are. I'm now sitting here with Barry and Kathy Creighton, two of the founding members who created this wonderful, beautiful community in the most beautiful land I have ever seen in Alaska. Yesterday I got to go to a tremendous hike about 2 hours away up into the mountains and see this beautiful glacier and ice field. The water and the wildlife and everything here is truly pristine and amazing. So if any of you do come, please come and visit Alaska and experience this true paradise of nature. So let's begin. Let's begin with Barry Creighton and Kathy, and let's begin with sharing your story. Perhaps first share your journey into macrobionics and how you first got involved in macrobionics, and then what inspired you to then create Ionia. Okay. Thank you.
Well, my name's Barry Creighton. I first crossed the path of macrobiotics back in 1969. I was going to a college, College of Old Westbury on Long Island. Let's see, what was it? I was born in 1942. I was born in the San Francisco area. I was certainly there in California in the 60s when all of that kind of activity got going, which I didn't really have that much to do with. This college, which I went, it had 80 students and no grades and was a fairly free-spirited place. And since it was the 60s, a young girl of the place came up and asked me if I was interested in drugs. I guess she was the recreational drug dealer, and I said, no, I didn't. I just never got into that. So she handed me and said, well, you might like this, and she handed me Asawa's Book of Judgment, which I proceeded to read. I didn't make much sense of it, but I was really into studying Dostoevsky at the time, Brothers Karamazov, and it was a book I was very familiar with. And there was some parts of it that I just couldn't quite get what it is that was going on. And so reading Sawa's book, I said, well, let's give it a try, and I tried food. So I just lived on buckwheat for about 3 months. And mostly some of that was just starving to death, actually, given that I didn't know about miso, much that I didn't know about in terms of macrobiotics and its common sense. But even the sort of fasting, half-starved buckwheat frame of reference, after 3 months, I became very weak and could hardly walk. But after one day, after all that time, I just woke up and all my energy was back. I was much lighter than I almost had ever been. I loved it. But the thing that actually got to me is this book that I've been reading for years unraveled for me about what it is that I thought Dostoevsky was after. I completely had missed it. And I actually attributed that entirely to macrobiotics, not to my own endeavors to uncover it, because I hadn't gotten anywhere. And that's actually that it cleared up some capacity of thinking. I sort of came from being a sugar freak, and all the sugar and all this and reading things is always a static that was there, and the static was gone. And the clarity of the thinking it is that macrobiotics produced sort of it sold me. Very after that, not long after, I went to Boston as a place to study as a center in macrobiotics. That was in 1970. And that was just a process of doing it for a while and then leaving and coming back and doing it and coming back. Kathy, who you'll soon hear, she and I were revolving around each other for years, and I would say it was only because of macrobiotics that we finally got together, because it gave us both, we both had a common vision of what it is that macrobiotics provided us, and finally got together, married, and started having children. We had a natural food bakery for a while back in Boston for a couple of years. And then actually just started wandering. We weren't sure quite how to do what it is that all of this was. And they had different experiences. We were at a Zen center in Los Angeles. And one of the we found macrobiotics very difficult in a way. It takes an enormous amount of time to really do it, and the whole questions of work and the whole questions of how you do that was very real for us. And we weren't very settled about how to anything. Anyway, one of the moments of it is we wrote to three wheat farmers. We're eating a lot of whole wheat, asking if we could come and help grow food for them and not charge anything, just to get the experience since we ate a lot of it. And we got two responses. These were farmers that grew organic wheat for Erewhon. Two of the farmers wrote back that they didn't want anything to do with us, and another one sent this magnificent letter to us that I didn't know quite how to translate, but it was a writing that was almost out of the Civil War times. So on the basis of that letter, we threw all of our stuff in a U-Haul and went to Pennsylvania, and it turns out it was a Mennonite family that had written the letter, and he made room for us to stay with him down in Pennsylvania there. We spent the winter in their summer kitchen. And he had a profound sense of exploration for the organic food that he was growing for Erewhon, and his basic innovative sense of life made him very interesting, him and his 12 to 15 children. And one day, sawing wood with him out on a wood pile, where he's always instructing me, stop pushing the saw so hard, just relax and let it do the work, I asked him why he was there, because a lot of the other families just seemed very narrow and just more into just the religion and the farming. He seemed much more explorative. Why he was with those families, there were 50 families that made up their community. And his response was, look, I could grow grain in the North Pole. Growing is not the problem. If you're going to have a way of life, you don't do it alone. Well, the struggles that Kath and I were having in our marriage and just what to do and how to do the macrobiotics had been on long enough that that thought was something we were, in a sense, ready to hear, that we got that for us anyway, macrobiotics wasn't going to work in our alone place. And that began a process of finding similar-minded people to get together.
Great.
And
let me stop you there, and thank you. First, Erewhon is the natural food company that was founded by my parents, Michio Nobili Pusci, in 1966, and they introduced the grains and other products that Barry has been talking about. But let me give Kathy a chance to speak and share her background a little bit and how she got involved and into macrobiotics. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I don't know quite what to say. I had through my association with Barry.
Did you meet before macrobiotics?
Yes, we met well before macrobiotics.
Oh, okay.
The thing is that I had a child very early.
Okay.
And my child Eliza was about 2 years old when I met Barry.
Uh-huh.
And I think maybe because I was so young, I was still looking for a way of life for myself that made sense. I needed to think about my child in a way that I would raise him in a way that made her, in a way that made sense. And Barry and I started a conversation right off the bat about what way of life would make sense for raising a child in these times that I could feel good about. And when macrobiotics came his way, it also came my way. And when I had one macrobiotic meal, and the food, I had already become vegetarian, but the food just spoke to me. It was the food that spoke to me. It just spoke to me in a way that, it's like, okay, from that moment on, I was macrobiotic through the food. And also, my daughter, who was like 7 by then, she was hyper, normally hyper, and difficult to live with. And after a very short time of macrobiotics, she calmed down and became the opposite, became a wonderful, relaxed experience of somebody to live with. It was just her and I, so that had a profound impact on me as well. So it was really through the food and the children and the partnership that I had with Barry and finding a way of life that made sense that we became very dedicated to macrobiotics. It really spoke to us.
Great. Wonderful.
And then when Micho talked about the macrobiotic community, he added the word community to macrobiotics. I was like, okay. That even made more sense.
Great. Okay, so then you gathered together with the other families who had similar interests, and what happened?
Well, that was back in 1983 in Boston. Boston was beginning to, this is, the whole gathering of when I first got to Boston was a lot of coming out of the 60s and a lot of young people, and macrobiotics was one of the places that young people came to explore. And I think at one point there was almost 2,000-3,000 young people in Boston studying. Well, the 70s and the times of what was going on in America, the 60s changed to the 70s, and the 70s changed to the 80s. There were different emphases, and macrobiotics was subject to those changes. And macrobiotics at Boston as a center was beginning to diminish. I'd say there was, by 83, there was only two-thirds of the people there that were there in 1970. And so we got a large three-story house in Jamaica Plain, and with only enough money to pay 1 month's rent, actually. We didn't know what would happen if it didn't. This was three families that did that by then. And but still gathered, pooling our money, we only had the money for 1 month's rent. But within 2 weeks, the house filled up, because I'd say it was just in the times that some families had already had a few children and weren't sure the future of the life in Boston anyway. That had a sense of our gathering. And we lived in Boston in the same house for about 2.5 years, and then started to realize together we all had several children. And those children out on the street of Jamaica Plain just wasn't, and they're all young, and we started to realize we really needed a much more country setting than Boston was providing. And that began a journey for us that ended up in Alaska, which has been an ideal place for us.
Wonderful. So tell me some of the issues that came up in terms of creating a community, and why did you choose Alaska?
Well, I'd say more it's like Alaska chose us.
It's an adventure.
It was an adventure. We first went to California, rented a boys' camp in the wintertime in the foothills of the Sierras, and that was temporary anyway because it was a boys' camp in the summer. We tried Seattle as an area. Again, by then we were, at that point, five families, lots of young children, and where to find a place, actually, that was going to allow for all of that. And at one point, just not knowing quite where to go, we saw a poster on a travel agent's building in Seattle, it said Alaska, and we said, well, why not? Let's give it a try. We have no idea what we're going to get there, but it's worth a try.
So Alaska was a homeland from the beginning for macrobiotics. It gave us all the elbow room, excuse me, and the isolation, not real isolation, just the right amount of isolation to raise our children and to be off the highway in all kinds of ways, from food to education to health to just point of view that we needed.
I would say that our biggest problems, actually by coming together, a lot of things got solved. We could do things we just couldn't possibly do alone in the separate families. When we first got here, actually we lived in teepees the first winter because we couldn't on this land because we didn't have time to build.
That was wonderful.
And that was wonderful. Very simple, and actually we were surprisingly not. It was a strong winter with a lot of snow and lots of weather, but we had a soapstone stove in each teepee, and the young children, of course, loved it because teepees are down on the ground, which is where they were. So, and then they just got started to get used to the weather and the place, and the next summer, because we were collected, we built 5 homes. And that started our world here. And it turns out by coming together, financials stopped being our worst problem. By collecting things, as example, we each had our own cars back then, and none of them were cars that would last more than a year. Well, we decided to pool our money, and we bought a brand new car, a Toyota Previa is what it was, and just recently retired the third one that we bought new, and it had taken us 380,000 trouble-free miles. Our problem was, how are you going to get, which we are now 50 people, to share one or two cars? That's something we can do something about. Getting a car for everybody that wants one, that's not what we do. Our biggest problem actually wasn't finances. Our biggest problem was livability. None of us were born for it or trained for it. One of the beauties of Alaska is actually the native population here, although having troubles that one would have with our culture. There are, I think, 870 true native villages that are operational in Alaska that have real village life. I'm on the Alaska Mental Health Board. When we were sent out to one of the villages, Togiak, a story I like is that we got out of this tiny little plane, and a native who was the substance abuse director of that village came up to us, and his first word wasn't hello. He looked us square in the eyes and said, we've been here 6,000 years. And I went into pure jealousy about how much it is that you would know in 6,000 years how to live with each other in a village way. Essentially in our world, the three basic things of our world when somebody comes here is food is definitely foundational. The next thing is we have meetings, certainly in the winter, every day. And those meetings is sort out where do we find the livability, where do we find the actual thought patterns that go along with the simple food, the simple thought to go with the simple food. We even say that the food is cooked in a yang kitchen and the thought patterns are cooked in an yin kitchen, where it is that thoughts are looked at and meals are cooked in the yin world. And the third thing that we have here is activity, from growing the food, cooking the food, building the building, sewing the clothes. All of that directionally is what we're increasingly discovering are things that help with a simple way of life. But basically, we'd have to say our biggest problem is livability. None of us were trained for it. At one point, I went to a college at Berkeley back in the 60s, and there wasn't a course called Livability 101. So all of it had to do with the exploration of macrobiotics and developing that.
Great, thank you. So the food is key in your community. Let's talk a little bit about that. How much of it is actually grown here, and what do you eat basically on a regular basis?
We eat a pretty standard macrobiotic diet.
Uh-huh.
We haven't grains, vegetables, beans, seaweed.
Uh-huh.
We're vegetarian. We don't do fish. We don't have.
Which is unusual. People would think that you would eat fish in the colder Alaskan climate, but you haven't been eating fish at all.
No, we don't eat fish. We don't raise our children on fish.
Uh-huh.
We have found that the kind of attitudes and thinking necessary for living in a community way of life is much more enhanced by by staying away from fish. Fish tends to have a more focused point of view attached to it that we really can't afford to have here. So we're also very led by the needs of the children in our food. We put them front and center. So there are always young children coming up through this community, and we want to make sure that they are.
Now, are the children home birth here, and how is
well, it certainly started that way. We of late have given lots of. We don't want to make home birth the only way to have a child.
Okay.
So a mother needs to have all the freedom in the world to go to a hospital. She needs it. Have a midwife if she needs it, or have it at home if she needs it, and be left completely alone. And people take advantage of all those three alternatives here.
Okay. And has there been any health issues with the children?
No. There has been no health issues with our children. They have grown up strong and free and very happy. We're very happy with how the children have done. The school system has left us completely alone.
Okay, yes.
Which is unusual. Yes, go ahead.
Well, okay. A story of that one that's a very Alaska story that gives you the sense of the spirit of Alaska. A lot of people came to Alaska for the pioneer aspect of the state. It's a very young state. When we first got here, we had, I suppose, the number, I'm not sure, 20 children, let's say. And nearby there was a lot of the people in the area in Kusilov, what they do is they fish in the summer and they run their dog teams in the winter. And one of the families taught at a local grammar school in Kusilov, about 7 or 8 miles from where we are. And they realized that we had like 20 children here, and each one of those children would have been worth $8,700 to the school if they were in the school. So I think the question was more about money than anything else. Anyway, we did. So they advised the superintendent of the whole Kenai Borough, which is a very large area. She was the superintendent, and she gave us a call and said, well, I think we have a problem. And I said, well, I guess we do. Look, instead of our coming into your office explaining our unusual circumstance, could you come out and spend a day with us? And she did. With an understudy, she came out, she spent the day, and at the end of the day, she said, look, I don't really believe in home education because in this day and age, to buy the $300,000, both a man and a woman have to be at work. Nobody's at home for the kid that's in home education. So I don't really hold with that. You are with your children 24/7. Some of your children have special needs. I don't think we could do better than what you're doing. And this is, quote-unquote, exactly what she said. She looked at me and said, strictly speaking, what you're doing is illegal, and I'm going to put a note in the file to leave you alone. That was a very Alaskan story. It turns out she had lived in a native village for 2 years when she first got here. And then it went on from there that she said that if me and my husband jump on a boat to Tahiti at some point, I don't know who you're going to get next, but as long as I'm here, we'll leave you alone. And as it turns out, something else did happen. An area of Alaska, and this is, again, just to get the flavor of Alaska, an area of Alaska called Galena started a system where a lot of Outback is here in Alaska. It isn't all city-oriented. A lot of people live in remote areas. Galena set up a program so that a computer could be at home and a teacher in a central place somewhere. And this borough didn't like that idea. It wanted its kids in its buildings. But so many people signed up for it, and this borough was losing the money on that. Turns out our understudy set up Russian programs for Russians that were living south of here, in a religious community, a very successful program for them. So this borough gave her understudy the task of setting up a similar program as Galena. He knocked on our door one day. We had 30 children signed up for this new program called the Connections Program in this area. And he said, I entirely agreed with the superintendent that you guys are doing fine, but if you sign up for this, that means for every third child you have, you'll have a new computer every year, which we'll replace every year, and a small amount of money every year to buy provisions, etc. And that sounded, and we'll essentially leave you alone. And he, basically, on the basis of that, he walked away with 60 children signed up. And we are so legally, we are now have a schooling system that we're part of that's been enormously symbiotic with our needs here, and we've worked very well together. And again, that is for the spirit of an Alaska story of why this place was so suited to experimenting with a different way of life. As an example, where we are right here, there's no building code. If you're stupid enough to build a house, it's going to fall on your head. That's your problem, and that's just the way we needed it. Versus there are areas of California that if you even add 4 inches onto your garage, it'll take 6 months' worth of great difficulty and bureaucracy. That tends to be very low here in Alaska. People are devoted to their sense of being able to do things their way here. So actually, it was a very benign place for us to be. Aside from the other thing that Alaska has, is a very strong sense of weather. One of the forces of macrobiotics is that we're subject to forces, and what a wonderful thing that is. Well, we have a true winter and we have a true summer, and get what a profound effect that has on us. The enormous amount of our activity is actually brought about by what season it is, and we think that's a very macrobiotic thing to be, come in touch with.
Yes, one of the things I'm still getting used to is here in the summer, there's daylight almost 19 hours of the day. It's like very disorienting for me, who's used to seeing the sun go down around 8:30, but now the sun doesn't go down around until midnight, which is kind of unusual and takes getting used to. And then, of course, in winter, it's dark most of the time, and 4 hours of the day of sunlight or something like that, 5 hours, also a challenge too. But so you mentioned the buildings. So you have 160 acres here, and tell me what kind of buildings do you have on here now?
All of our buildings are log homes with metal roofs.
And made with the trees from the property?
No. Uh-huh. No.
But nearby.
Nearby.
Okay.
Nearby, yeah. And we also have a mill, a sawmill. We make two-sided logs so we can build with them.
And you have some smaller cabins, and you have a large long house or community house.
We have, seven or eight small cabins.
Eight. And the community building is a 12,000 square foot building.
And we are about halfway through building a barn.
And every man, woman, and child was involved in that building. I guess that's one of the things we started to, by having lots of young children around, and we're working with them all the time, one of the things that we found is that learning is a very hard thing to do, but one of the easier ways to acquire, anyone between 2 and 5 doing their language of that culture, they don't learn it, they absorb it. Well, by doing things together, from building or sewing or growing or whatever it is, by doing these things together, it tends to be something that young people absorb, which is, we've noticed, a very nice way to get things.
Now, we've been talking a lot about young people, and we actually have one of them here who is David Creighton, let's hear from him and share his experience in growing up in the Ionia community. So, David, first tell us how old are you and what your experience has been.
Well, it's funny because I'm actually 35, so I'm not actually that young anymore. But I think growing up here, you end up perpetually young at heart in a lot of ways, and I'm trying to hold on to that as long as I can. And I guess growing up at Ionia, well, for one, it was always more of a dream than a reality for when I was much younger, and to see it all sort of realized keeps me reminded that, you know, there is a direction pulling all of us in a way, and you just pay attention to that, and things just kind of keep developing. There's this natural progression that happens here that just keeps becoming more and more interesting and rewarding. There's, you know, it started and it grows, and, you know, it's quite established now, but, you know, there's an infinite amount of development yet to happen, and it's just being a part of that, it's pretty amazing. And I can't imagine ever, you know, the childhood that I had growing up and the freedom to really enjoy that childhood and not have that be shortened, but, you know, enjoyed, rather. I can't imagine not wanting to give that to my own kids, and to, you know, I spend a lot of time traveling and really seeing everything that's out there on this planet and what's going on and being a part of all of that and researching all the different lives and options that exist for being alive in these times, you know, and at the end of the day, I can't find another option that's more interesting than some of the things that are just being explored and figured out here. It's the most exciting thing going, for me at least.
Great. So let's talk about the vision and future that you have. Certainly you started this community as a way to practice the macrobiotic way of life for yourself and for your children and to work together with others. But now, what is the future vision, short-term, long-term vision of this place?
We haven't gotten that yet. We're not even close.
Okay.
We're just beginning.
So you're just kind of leaving it open.
Same vision, macrobiotic community way of life, and someday we'll get there.
Okay. Someday you'll get there. Anything to add, Frank?
Well, I mentioned that a local native said that they'd been where they were for 6,000 years.
Right.
It may take 1,000 years to actually develop true village mentality, such the village is what you're doing, and that you have your thought patterns think about how the village will fare. We've been here almost a quarter of a century, and that's hardly embryonic in regards to that. But this does have the macrobiotics and the dream of macrobiotics as the force and the thought patterns that allow for that.
You could say a demonstration.
A demonstration
of one peaceful world.
Okay.
You know, when Mitchell talked about one peaceful world.
Right.
You know, I thought, well, you know, you can teach one peaceful world, or you can do it.
Right.
You know, and you can spread the word, or you can become it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the doing and the becoming just seem to be more down our line,
yeah,
and more of a challenge that was interesting to us.
At one of the lectures that Micho had back in Arlington Street Church in the early 70s, he said, it probably takes 3 generations for macrobiotics really to take hold. When we heard that, we just basically said, well, I guess we better get on with it.
I have some pretty practical ideas about what's next for things, being, I guess, second generation, and you know, and to agree with what you said, you know, one of Gandhi's famous quotes was just be the change you want to see in the world, and there's a lot of change I'd like to see in the world, and the best way of realizing that is to just simply demonstrate it. You know, it has such an effect when you can show somebody something as opposed to talking about it. It's like a picture is 1,000 words times 10. And I think that the main goal of Ionia is to look at everything, that all the concepts and ideas and ways of doing things that currently exist on this planet, the cutting edge and the history that human beings have, that is the human culture and the human experience, and distilling all of those down to things that are fundamentally real as opposed to more made-up concepts, and taking all the things that, in my definition, are real and one, agreeing with everyone as to what is real versus what is made up, and that's a long conversation right there, and then gathering up all the real things that exist on this planet that every culture has a piece of and is worthy of continuing and investing in, and gathering them up and figuring out a way to have all of the things that are worth having in this planet, whether it be an experience or a thing, and figuring out how to put them all together in a way that ends up becoming a truly whole life, a complete human experience of being born and living and passing on and getting the most out of that. And that's a pretty big, tall order, but, you know, is there really any other thing that's more exciting? And I guess that's what I mean by this is an exciting place.
Great. So as we continue our conversation, I do invite you. I will open it up to questions. So if you have a question, press 5-star on your phone, and I will unmute your line. So feel free to do so at any time during as we're talking. So as in being a demonstration and a model place, have you had people come here and say, ah, great, wonderful, and then trying to go out and do the same thing or create something similar? Or have you helped anybody to try to pursue that path?
We have many, many visitors, and many people come for a couple of hours to a couple of months to a couple of years.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've ever really had anybody. They take pieces of this, and they take them home to wherever they came from. But I don't think we've ever had anybody want to really use us as a model for another community as yet. People talk about Ionia South, but Ionia someplace else, but they've never really gone away with that intention.
And it's something we would really hope for. We would wish there were 20 other places like this, one so that when our children grow up, they have a place to go and explore. And one of the other things, other than just exploring the world as a whole, one of the things, some of the things that we come up with here are things that are generally so maybe for others. Some of what we do here is just idiosyncratic to the personalities of the people that made this up. It wouldn't be of much use to a different, if there were 20 other communities, some of what they would be doing would just be idiosyncratic to their particular little community. But some of the things they would be doing would be things that were generally of use to everyone. And that would be the use, is the cross-referencing of 20 different places that was all exploring this would enormously enhance the direction of it all. So it's something we'd certainly wish for and would certainly like to help have happen.
I think we're still a little bit young to inspire that kind of, and maybe the world is a little too young to inspire that other community. It'll come.
I certainly see that happening within my time scales that I'm looking at. I would be very surprised if there weren't. There seems to be a new wave of interest currently about people changing their priorities a little bit to incorporate more thought about food in a much broader way that affects everybody in the country, not just a small segment of macrobiotics. There's definitely a lot of very interesting interest that's out there, and I see more of a need for collaboration from a lot of different places, unexpected places that would be interested in sharing and learning about what Ionia's research has been thus far.
Yes, I mean, I think the current events of today have made what you're doing more interesting and more valuable to the times. I mean, certainly macrobiotics was quite popular in the 60s and 70s and then sort of waned in those years. But then now with the resurgence of global warming and environmental pollution and energy crisis, and there's certainly the oil spill now, and certainly the industrialization of food and all of that that's been going on. The priorities that you've maintained all these years have become
personal health problems.
Yes, personal health problems. Yes.
Physical and mental.
Yes. So let's briefly talk a little bit about global warming. How has it affected here in Alaska? Have you noticed it? Have you had an impact?
Not as much snow as there used to be.
I think our growing season right now is 2 weeks longer than it was when we first showed up.
Mm-hmm.
It feels that way. No, it is that. Now, what that's coming from is perhaps debatable, but that's the case now.
And what are you doing in terms of moving towards a sustainable energy?
Well, a lot of our world is exploring that. For the longhouse, the stoves that we have are called Russian, they're based on the Russian fireplace the Russian peasants came up with hundreds of years ago. The actual gases are burned at 1,200 degrees, so nothing's going to the atmosphere.
It's wood.
And it's wood stoves. We have another building that housed two stoves that are called Garn, the inventor of it being the name of the man back east, and he helped with our building up to second stove like this in the state of Alaska. It actually has a burning capacity of the gases going through at 2,000 degrees. Nothing's going to the atmosphere. And these two stoves, behind each one of them is 2,000 gallons of water, so that's in the wintertime, those two stoves are fired for 2 hours. It gets the water up to 180 degrees, and that then heats the basement of our community building, provides 1,500 gallons of hot water that we used to have to heat with propane. So that's certainly a saving side since the propane is going through the roof. We have a 100-foot tower out in the field that we put up last October, which has got a computer on it and is monitoring the wind here, such it is that we can see. This October, we'll check that computer and see what the actual wind state in this area is and what kind of efficient wind power we can use. On the back of the Garn building it's all solar panels, such it is that the solar panels are heating the water in the summertime, and we have a lot of sunlight here in Alaska, although it's raining right at the moment, to do that with. And actually, the second generation is very involved with the whole green movement. We've had young people from here be brought down to Juneau to talk to the governor, invited to go there by the governor to talk about how the youth is interested in the green energy. And these young people have been sent to Washington to talk to officials there about the direction of this. There's a wave coming in, probably on a planetary level, certainly on a nationwide level, and certainly in the Alaska level, which is very hit by the more than most places by the global warming since what is it called, the frozen ground that's underneath? It's starting to melt in certain areas, which is causing problems. The water is starting to rise, and some villages are actually having to move. So there are some very real things happening in Alaska. And so if there is a wave coming, I guess our frame of reference to that, I did come from California. I didn't do any surfing, but one thing I can imagine about surfing is if a wave is coming and you're sitting on a surfboard and you just sit there, all you'll do is go up and down. One of the tricks of surfing is start paddling. So that's what a lot of our world and the second generation here is very interested in, the paddling of moving in all directions about how to deal with just those kinds of problems.
Yes, and we had David here speaking as a voice of the second generation. Have you and he's 35, so there's many young adults here. Have they over time any difficulty integrating into society, into the regular world, or he seems to be very on top of things?
It took him a while.
him
a little while, you know. He had to sort himself out. We really encourage our children once they're grown to go out into the world and see what it's like and explore.
Because I imagine it must be kind of a shock, a culture shock for
them. It is a bit of a culture shock. You know, just anybody who grew up macrobiotically, the first thing that hits you is the food.
Yeah.
And at first you're attracted to it, and then you have a struggle with it, and then you have to sort yourself out personally and on a community-wide level. So all our children go through this on a lot of different levels, educationally, work, you know, private versus community. They all have to choose this place as adults,
right?
Not just be born into it and automatic that they're here. They usually go out and sometimes travel widely, and we encourage them as much as possible to please explore.
And they do.
We never know if they're going to come back or not.
Right.
And some have, most have, and some haven't. Uh-huh. Now, we have Ionians living in Austin. We have Ionians living in New York City.
Uh-huh.
But they stay in touch, and they all seem to think that they want to raise their children here.
Okay.
So we'll see what happens.
Yes, I really appreciated that after talking to some of the second generation, that they say that they do have to go out and they have to find and choose this place on their own.
Yeah.
I thought that was quite inspirational and quite a testament to your way of raising them and encouraging them to be themselves and discover themselves, and that's really tremendous. So again, if you have any questions, please press 5 star on your phone. Is there anything you would like to share in terms of if you had the world at your stake, if you were on stage with the world, what would you tell the world? What would you say say to the world that is, you know, the rat race, the pollution, the corporate world, the bankers, the all of these people, the education system, the medical system, you know, what would you say to all of them if you had that opportunity to speak out?
I would just say, don't lose faith. It's all okay.
Don't lose faith.
It's all going to be fine.
All right, okay.
It's all going well.
And
I'd also like to say that we are very, very happy and thankful that Thea has come to visit us.
Oh.
That he has been a wonderful addition to Ionia for the last few weeks that he's been here.
A few days.
Four days. Been here. And we hope he spends more time here.
Barry, anything you'd like to, like if you had the president's here, what would you tell him?
Well, that would be the best way, is that somebody's here and can see this versus something it is that we're just talking about. It's the actual living experience of it that's the impact, not just the ideas that are in it. In some ways, you could say macrobiotics has produced a fairly profound optimism in us. Not in spite of the times, but almost because of the times. Good ideas about things have been in the library for thousands of years. Somebody that's back in Boston, they read a book, Walden, by Thoreau, and say, oh my goodness, nature is so important. I have so little of it in my life. They go out to Walden Lake on Sunday, and they sit there, and they see birds, and they see trees, and they see water. They say, oh, my goodness, I want this in my life. But then they go back on Monday, and they're working at the insurance office. The Walden's a good idea, but one of the basic things of change was certainly something how we experience our own lives. The luckiest part of my life is that parts of it went to absurdity, and in absurdity, real change started to become possible. And I think these times have a directional frame of reference of things that may have been going on for a long time reaching a point of absurdity that actually not great government or great leaders, but just the common man saying, I wanted a family. However, I work all day long. My wife works all day long. The children are in a school more as a place of glorified babysitting service, given our culture really doesn't have time for children much. The problems of this, I'm on the Alaska Mental Health Board. I like that because I got information that's nationwide and statewide. Right now, it was 5 years ago that it was presented to from the federal world that they expect one out of every four Americans to experience a serious mental illness at some point in their life. And this is a figure that is rising. One of the other aspects that's out there is that given that both parties have to work, young children between 2 and 5 are being sent to daycare centers. You could say there isn't a culture in the world historically that sent a 2 to 5-year-old anywhere. It was the family, it was the home experience it is that a child absorbed the language, absorbed the values, absorbed the entire direction of the culture that it was in. So some of the children, this is again information coming from the Alaska Mental Health Board, 2 to 5-year-olds are starting to display behavioral problems, and some of the solution that our society has to that is it's giving those children psychotropic drugs to calm them down, which will change their brain patterns for the rest of their life. This is being seen on a federal level, on a statewide level, as an enormous problem in the direction of things, and it's the very problem that's reaching such a critical stage that it is that things can go to an absurdity that it is that one becomes willing not to change just because it's a good idea, but having change be something that's inherent to the experience it is that you want to start to have.
Wonderful. Well, great. So I think we're just about out of time. Thank you very much for being on the call, for creating Ionia and making it what it is, and for the ongoing dream of what it can be. And again, that is, I understand it's just in its infancy, or even not just, but just. So it's a huge vision that you're carrying. And so if you do have any further questions for Barry or Kathy, you can contact them through their website, which is www.ionia.org. It's I-O-N-I-A.org. That's, again, www.ionia.org. So thank you again. Next Monday, which is tomorrow, we may or may not have a guest on Monday night. That's still yet to be confirmed. You can visit the website at www.phiakushi.com to get an update on that. It's phiakushi.com. If there is no guest, I'll be on briefly, and I can answer questions for people on any topic that you'd like. I will be on for some time. Other than that, I'd like to thank you again for joining us, and have a great afternoon. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.